Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
When did you start to feel like that, like you were questioning who you were as a, like your gender?
Yeah. I started noticing it around the age of six.
Okay.
You know, there was this distinct moment that I remember. I was a little kid and like, you know, how parent, you know, like my mom's like brushing my hair and I had like had this towel on, but it, like she made this comment. She was like, and my mom was like, I'm sorry. She thought she made me trans from this comment. I'm like, no, mom, that's not what you did. You know?
Yeah.
But like, I remember like I had the towel on and she said, oh, it looks like a dress. And I just remember thinking like, oh, I love that feeling, what she just said to me. And that was my first like experience with that.
We've all been put here for a reason and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. I think in life, it's so important. I like to start light, but I do want to start with this. I realized yesterday I was on a walk with if you've read the chapter in my book, and I talk a lot about mean girls and that kind of stuff and a friendship breakup and how traumatizing it was for me. But I also talk about a story where I had kind of been, I was at one of my lowest points of my life, and I was at a party and I screamed at a girl and I cussed her out. And then that was like the end of me in my little community, beach community, outside of Los Angeles. And I went through this horrible friend breakup, and people in the community like, I felt like I was wearing a scarlet letter, and I had apologized to the girl that I cussed out probably a year ago or more. And I realized yesterday, I'm telling the story horribly, but basically what happened was in the chapter, I talk about how we're like in a good place and we're friendly and she forgave me, and she recently has gone through stuff. And so we decided to go for a walk yesterday. So we were walking right next to the beach and it was beautiful. And I talk a lot about these women I call the Karens that are my ex-friends. And the two that probably hurt me the most happened to walk by at the exact minute that I was walking with this girl. That I am very open with the fact that I was not always kind to her. I was not always the person that I am today. I'm not perfect. I say all the time I'm perfectly imperfect because I think we all are. But it was a kind of a full circle moment for me because in my head, I dreaded this time. One of them had moved away. So I was like, oh, I never have to see her again. It's done, whatever. And I thought by seeing this person, I would be so triggered and I'd go home and I'd cry and it would start all over for me again. And I realized I was okay. I'm okay. I thought about it. Yeah. Does it bother me a little bit still? Yeah. I mean, do they piss me off? Yeah. But it's a full circle moment. And I'm going to bring my guest in right now because I'm so excited to have Joanna Whaley on with me. Joanna is a musician, an LGBTQ plus extraordinaire host, a former faith advocate and speaker. And I am just so thrilled to have you on. I met you on TikTok, Joanna. I was following you one day and you were talking about something I can't remember. And I just immediately was like, I need to have this person on my podcast. Hi, Joanna. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. And when I introduce you, I want my audience to know something that I don't think should define anybody, but it's something that we're going to be talking about today, is Joanna is trans. And I first don't want to introduce Joanna as trans because I don't think that that should define anybody. Just like saying that would be like Megan Judge coming on a podcast and going, Megan Judge is a straight hetero woman. She's also a speaker and a podcaster. Like nobody does that. But because we're going to be talking about Joanna's story today, I that is huge to me. And I bring up a lot how I do consider myself an ally to the LGBTQ plus community. I feel it's important to use my platform, which is so important to me, to talk about how everybody should be treated equally with kindness. We're taught, if you're spiritual and Christian, love thy neighbor, which we'll get into with Joanna. And I felt the need in this climate to use my platform because there's so much hate towards your community right now, to use it to try and get people that maybe don't understand that trans people are people too, just like we all are, what it's like to be trans and in this climate right now. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. And you honestly, you hit it on the head. You know, I come from, I was an evangelical pastor for 18 years. Before I came out, and you know, even before I came out, the language and the rhetoric about someone like me was harsh, and especially now, like as we're recording this, we're gearing up towards another election. The rhetoric is getting louder and more vicious, so I'm really happy we're having this conversation, for sure, just so that people can see, yes, as you said, I'm a human being. I have feelings. I have a life. I have children who, you know, look up to me and, you know, who want me to get food just like every other parent out there for them every 10 seconds. So like humanizing ourselves to everyone around us is important. So
before we get into your story, I think I can't imagine what it's like right now in this environment to feel scared. Like, I think your community has always been scared and afraid and like has the highest suicide rates of any community. Now they're even higher. But what is it like in this climate right now for you in particular?
So I was with some friends the other day. I live in Detroit, which is right next to Canada. And I was walking with a friend. We were walking down the Riverwalk in Detroit, and we had this conversation, and we said, isn't it weird that we are standing here in America looking at Canada and just wishing we could go there because it's safer for us? This kind of, like, living in America right now feels, as a transgender person, feels like any minute, like I have to think about how can I leave this country and get back to my kids. It's like this constant thing in the background of our head that's thinking, like, any minute we're going to have to be a refugee. And that's how it feels. I know that might sound extreme, but like that's the feeling we have, is like any minute, like I don't know if I'll live in this country in 20 years. Like that's how it feels at times. And so kind of living with that cloud, it's like, you know, it's hard because we have kids, we have lives here. And, you know, I mean, there's so much that we'll get into, but it always feels in the back of our minds.
Yeah, I just had to say it like as we open, because it's so scary. And it's just like this stuff has like come to a boiling point. And just with the Bud Light commercial, I mean, the with Dylan, like the ad, I follow a ton of trans because I want to be supportive of the community and understand it for myself. I don't understand everything, just like people don't understand everything about everyone, you know, like that's right. Part of why I do this, so people can try and attempt to understand what it would be like. But I was following a TikTok that Dylan did the other day, and it was about her being in Peru. And she had to escape, like she's been like, if you're not familiar, there was a Bud Light campaign and people went like loco nation over it because it was just one in particular trans woman that did an ad like with her face portrayed on the can. Correct.
And then
she talks about that she can't leave her house. She had to leave the country, like you just kind of talked about. This is just a human being trying to live their life. So I just want people to like kind of think about it, because if you, like the definition of racism and prejudice and bigotry is not understanding. So if you don't understand something, try to understand it. We all have it in us, but it doesn't mean that we have to be this way. And in my deep in my heart, I would like to think the best of people. So I want to get off my soapbox because I tend to go there. And I want to ask you about you. So tell me where you were born, where you grew up. I want to know about your early childhood. We'll start there.
Yeah. So I grew up in the Detroit area. That's where I live now. Haven't always lived here, but grew up in Detroit area, grew up Catholic, very good Catholic family, you know, beer tents and all that, you know, we did the whole thing in the Catholic world. Some former Catholic is chuckling right now because
I'm
of the
Catholic.
Beer tent. Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, we were devout. I mean, my grandmother would drag me to church every day of the week in the summer, because she went 5 days, you know, she went like 5-6 days a week. That was my backdrop. Very religious family, you know, but always a very like open family. So my mom, I was raised by a single mom, didn't know my dad until the fifth grade, which we'll get into a little bit, I'm sure. But, you know, my mom was like your cliche, beer league softball mom. So like, you know, she played softball like every night. I was always surrounded by lesbians and trans people everywhere, but I didn't look at them as lesbians and trans people. I looked at them as like Tina, and I looked at that, you know, them as like Barb, and all, you know, they were just people in my life. And so, yeah, grew up here, very like queer background, but also like a very Catholic background, which is like this weird, you know, like opposite spectrums that we lived in all the time, which really kind of set the stage for like how I was wired at a young age, as far as like what I believed and how I saw people, and not even quite as a kid knowing what was going on in me. But it definitely set the stage for the love and acceptance that I try to give to others now, for sure.
What was your childhood happy? I mean, it sounds like you had something happen in fifth grade with your dad coming into the picture. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah. Well, so I guess a couple things started happening in my childhood. I had a great childhood. My mom, just amazing. Like, when you think of single moms who are like rock stars, that was my mom, you know, like how she kept me fed, you know, like with the like $2 she could like bring home, like was just amazing. And, You know, she just, she, I love my mom today. But yeah, I didn't know who my dad was until the fifth grade. He just wasn't in the picture. And, you know, I'm literally fifth grade, I'm meeting my dad for the first time, which was very weird. It was always a very transactional conversation, you know, relationship. But yeah, as a kid, like I started experiencing, what we now know as gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. But like not having any language for that as a kid. So, what do you do with that? And that was kind of the backdrop of my childhood. Did all the boy things that you were supposed to do, like played all the sports every day of the week, you know, played baseball and basketball with my friends and did what I was supposed to do. Yeah. And so, especially when dad showed up in the pictures, like, well, now I better like do all the boy things.
Yeah.
And,
like baseball, know, like all the things. And when did you start to feel like that, like you were questioning who you were as a, like your gender?
Yeah. I started noticing it around the age of six.
Okay.
You know, there was this distinct moment that I remember. I was a little kid and like, you know, how parent, you know, like my mom's like brushing my hair and I had this towel on, but it, like she made this comment. She was like, and my mom was like, I'm sorry. She thought she made me trans from this comment. I'm like, no, mom, that's not what you did. You know?
Yeah.
But like, I remember like I had the towel on and she said, oh, it looks like a dress. And I just remember thinking like, oh, I love that feeling, what she just said to me. And that was my first like experience with that. And like, I would always, like be noticing like what my girl cousins were wearing and like always just kind of wanted to play with them and be like them.
Mm-hmm.
But it really started to show itself in early elementary school when all the boys were getting really gross about all the other girls in school, you know, like all their hormones start raging. And so, I started having a very different experience than all of my friends, my guy friends,
mm-hmm.
where they were wanting to like, you know, be gross with girls and like do things with girls. I just wanted to be the girls.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be one of them. And that was a very different experience. And then like, you know, with little like boys, you can't say something back then that was queer, you know, or you'd be ridiculed. So
yeah,
I never talked about it. So that was the backdrop of my childhood. I knew something was up. I didn't have any language for it. My mom tried to like talk about it with me and was like, hey, the only language we had was, are you gay?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't think I'm gay. That's what I would say to her. She started noticing because I was wearing her clothes like at night.
Yeah.
And I like ripped a pair of her shoes because I was getting too big.
At what age were you feeling like, at what age did you start like experimenting? And I, by the way, I love your mom that she was supportive because there are so many kids that don't have that, sadly.
I know.
Yeah.
When I started experimenting was probably, I would say maybe fourth grade is when I started like, oh, I'm going to put on my mom's dress that's like hanging up in the laundry room. Like I would do that, you know, I was a kid in the summer. I'd stay up late. Everybody's asleep. I like would put her clothes on. But eventually I just started getting too big and was ripping her stuff. So that's when she, confronted me. She's like, hey, are you gay? And I'm like, no. She's like, why are you wearing my clothes? I'm like, I don't know. I just like them, you know? But I was like, I'm sorry. I won't do it again, you know? And that just kind of like, try to push that down because I didn't want my mom to think I was gay because, you know, all the kids in school made all the gay kids' lives like awful. So, yeah, of course I wasn't gay.
Which is so hard because that's like a totally separate thing. You just want to be like, especially in grade school, it's so hard, or middle school. You just want to be accepted, you know?
Yeah.
And to stop you, for the people that are listening, because I have done an episode with a mother of a trans daughter, And she, I did that like probably, I re-released it pretty recently, but I probably recorded it like 2 years ago. And same thing. She was kind of like living in Virginia, in rural Virginia, you know, which is difficult. And, you know, she's like, I just knew like her daughter's now star was, you know, didn't want to wear the clothes that she didn't want to wear the boy clothes. She didn't want to wear the things that's, she felt gross and upset, you know? And so she, her mother is so supportive and was like, you know, trying to fight it and then just gave in. And that, you know, and this, that's, Star's very lucky that she has her mother.
Yeah.
And it sounds like for you, nobody really understood back then how to deal with this, because you're either gay or straight. You're put into a box, right?
And yeah. If you're a boy wearing girls' clothes, the only frame of reference people had for that was Silence of the Lambs. So of course it was like, oh no, I can't let my kid do that. Because then my kid will become a serial killer. And like, you know, that was the only frame of reference back then. So at least in our little world, in our community. So,
but let me stop you right there. Isn't it so interesting how the trans community historically has been made to be like villainized, like serial killers and.
Or we're tricking you.
Or like bad or mean or just all of these things. And at the end of the day, it's not true. you know, it's like, they're just people, like, just like everybody else. There's bad people and there's good people. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting how that historically has gone down like that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, there's some jerks out there, but I mean, 99% of the trans people I know are just like, so kind. So
Okay, so tell me, like, as you started to get older and go through puberty and that kind of stuff, that must have been really difficult for you.
Yeah, and so again, not knowing that I had gender dysphoria, not understanding what that was.
For my listeners that maybe don't understand what that means, can you explain for somebody?
Yeah. So gender dysphoria is a condition that is labeled in what's called the DSM, which is like the basically, sorry, Christians, the Bible of mental disorders, or, you know, and there's debate if it should be a mental disorder in the book, but of mental conditions. And the mental condition of gender dysphoria is that your internal sense of gender identity differs from your biological born sex that you were assigned at birth. So, you know, it differs from your, you know, sorry for the word, but like genitalia, like you just don't identify with what your body did, which, you know, it's becoming a very common thing now that we're becoming more aware of it.
So going back to like that period in your time where you were dealing with this, what was that like?
Oh gosh. Yeah, it was, you know, I had to strap on the baseball uniform or the football uniform, you know, go to school, put on my boy clothes, and then, you know, once everyone was asleep, that was when I felt comfortable that I could actually be me. But I always felt very secretive. To make matters more complicated, you know, in high school is when it started getting really bad. I started really feeling distress about putting on my, you know, my Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, collared shirt and my, you know, whatever, you know, dumb teenagers wore back then. But like, you know, it was really hard for me to do it because all of my like girlfriends were like, looked cute and I wanted to dress like them. And so it became really difficult because I got involved in church. And I all of a sudden this kind of new narrative showed up in my world, which really put me at odds with how I felt. And this thing that I was like not sure what to do with at one point, like, I don't know if I can do anything with this. My, you know, my mom had like created an environment that was very like, hey, you're going to be fine if this is what you are, you know. Mm-hmm. She kind of set that stage for me. But now I was building this new group of friendships apart from my family that was telling me LGBTQ people are going to burn in hell.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, well, now I have this even greater like problem in my life that I was just kind of afraid of what my friends would say. But now I'm worried about what God's going to say about me.
Yeah, especially if you're somebody of faith, you know, I can relate in a totally separate way, by the way, but just being Catholic, growing up Catholic, we have something called Catholic guilt. Everybody that's Catholic has it. And it's like when you're a kid and you start having like sexual feelings or like feelings about somebody or anything along those lines, making out, like when you first make out. I remember being like terrified that I was a bad person. And you know, if you're brought up in my family, Irish Catholic parents, don't talk about sex, don't talk about any of that stuff to us until I got like some book called, I think it was called like How Babies Are Made. So we have this in our put in our brains from a young age, you know, and so I can't imagine what that would have been like with what you were dealing with and then put into that. In that kind of community where you're meant to feel like there's something really wrong with me and so much shame and guilt. Yeah.
And what's difficult about that as a teenager, right? Mm-hmm. So this was like one of those rock and roll cool churches that seemed very welcoming and everybody's hugging each other all the time. Like the music's at 110 decibels. There's lights and smoke. It was like cool church. It's like, this is a place you want to be, right? Mm-hmm. So you're building all these friendships and you're in this place you want to be in. But then you're hearing these things about something inside of you that's now putting you at war with yourself and something you've never experienced before. Like now I'm walking into this place that's supposed to bring freedom to me. And I am feeling an immense amount of what you're saying, guilt, but I also am very drawn to this. So it's a very weird, conflicting thing to experience as anybody, you know, to be drawn to something that you think is amazing, but then you feel this weird guilt. It's so strange.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you end up doing? Like, did you stay? Because then you went on to... Well, I'm probably jumping ahead, but tell me about that.
I stayed for 15 years.
so did you fight it for 15 years or
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. So let's back up. Okay. So I'm in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I start going to this rock and roll church.
When you say rock and roll church, is this like, and I hate to use this example, but is it like Hillsong, like one of those?
Yes.
Like,
yes. So okay. For anyone listening who's never been to a mega church.
A mega church, sorry.
Yeah. Like mega church is any church that's like over 1,000 people, I think is the technical term, but whatever. Okay. There is like a stage. There is lights, fog machines, big sound systems. It looks like a concert when you walk in.
I feel like I'm shocked because I still do go to church and I am still a practicing Catholic and I do have hope for all like religions that everybody will be treated equally. That's my dream. There's parts of it I don't obviously I have issues with or I wouldn't be talking to you today. So I socially don't agree with everything, but I do think my church in particular is very supportive of they even have their own LGBTQ group. I think that's my hope for the future, but I will say I am shocked that I have never been to that church because I'm a singer and like probably my dream would be to be like the lead singer in the like mega church band.
Yeah.
You're and a so, singer too, well, I you, know.
Well, yeah. you say that, yeah. and that was what happened to me. That okay. was my dream.
Okay.
I walk into this church, and all of a sudden, I'm a musician. I'm like, I want to do this. I want to be a part of this. So in the pursuit of that dream, I allowed myself to look the other way at things that were actually harmful to me.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
order to get in front on the stage in front of people. So to go through the story here, high school, I end up going to this church, and then I end up in the bands. I ended up in the worship teams. I'm one of the lead singers in this big, huge mega church. 2,000 people at the age of 18. I am singing in front of 2,000 people every week. Amazing, right? Mm-hmm. So fun. I am, knowing my background, where I came from, very open, you know, family, a faith-based, open, affirming family.
Yeah.
Coming into this church that seemed open and affirming. So I actually got hired by this church. I was hired by this church to be what's called a worship pastor, like the music pastor for all the teenage ministry. So I'm doing that. And in the middle of it, I'm going to school. I'm going to college. And this whole gender thing starts coming up a lot. It starts coming up in my private life. Now, all of a sudden, the way the church is preaching, everything's going. In college, I started to think about, because the first time I ever met trans people was in college. And so I started thinking like, oh my gosh, like this, what this person is how I feel. And I'm like, well, of course I'm in this kind of like church they would love me no matter what, right? Just mm-hmm. because of the language they use. So I start talking about it to my pastors as a staff member, as a pastor in this church. And I was given an ultimatum. This was a couple of years in. I worked at this church for 15 years, and they sent me to conversion therapy 2 times. Conversion therapy, if nobody's familiar, is a practice called, it's under the term of biblical counseling. The idea is that they will use God's truth, they will use God's word and prayer to change your gender identity. Oh, you feel like a woman, but you were born male? We're going to change that desire in you. And it is traumatizing. It is awful.
And I have news for people. Guess what? It does not work.
Yeah.
So the people that you see that hello. In life, you're like, hello, the people that you know, I mean, I've heard of conversion therapy, obviously, but a lot of people maybe haven't. It is like, it would be like telling me, right? And I'm using myself as an example. Say I am attracted to men, which I am. I'm happily married, thank God. For 22 yeah. years. I wouldn't have said this like 3 days ago because we were in a huge fight, but we're fine now. And it would be like me going and then being like, you are not attracted to your husband. You are like, yeah. there is something wrong with you. You are a bad person. God yeah. does not like this. So like, that's for now, listeners. Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Imagine. 'Cause you've been through it. Yeah.
Imagine the therapist looking at you mm-hmm. or whatever listener who loves who they love. Now imagine them blaming your mother mm-hmm. for being a single mom, or your dad, or trying to point it to something wrong or not in that like ideal picture of a family. If you don't have the dad and the mom and the white picket fence and the dogs in your yard, they try to pick out something in your family background to blame your transness on. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very ill-guided, and it is painful. It puts you at war with people you never need to be at war with in your own soul, in your own life. And it puts you at war with you.
With yourself. And does it make you question like wanting to stay on the planet? Does it make you question? Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, I'm just asking this outright because it's so painful. for people to deal with this?
Yeah, I know people who have been through conversion therapy who have killed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That is the depth and the weight of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the trans community, I say this all the time, everywhere I go and speak, the trans community, the suicide rates are not high because they're unhappy with their transition.
Mm-hmm.
People are unaliving themselves because of how they're being treated and how they're being told God views them. And so
this isn't just a one-time thing, by the way, for listeners. And I can't shut up. Sorry.
No, that's
it's a constant, right? It's a constant where you're constantly being judged and mistreated and, being told there's something wrong with you. People can only take so much, you know?
Yeah. So after my, it's hard to say this sometimes, but after my third round, I went through conversion therapy 3 times.
Wow.
2 before I was married and once after being married, which is a totally different experience being married and being a pastor going through that and being, you know, single. But yeah, it isn't just when you're sitting in front of that therapist. It becomes 24 hours a day. You are at war with yourself. So here's what conversion therapy does to somebody. I could not walk into any store that had a women's clothing department without feeling an immense amount of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if my family wanted to go to Target to pick up some toy or to like get a, you know, some potato chips, and most Targets, if you ever walk in Target, the women's section is right there when you walk in. I would sit in the car. I wouldn't go in. I had to wait in the car, or the second we go in there, if the family went this way in the store, I had to go the complete opposite way. Because I was so afraid that if I even saw a woman's blouse, that I would be, quote, tempted. And that's what it does. It puts you at war with yourself 24 hours a day, no matter what you're listening, watching. You can't listen to, like, liberal media. You can't listen to NPR because they're queer-friendly. Anything that's queer-friendly, you got to turn it off. Mm-hmm. And so you're always on guard, and you're always nervous that somebody is going to get mad at you if you're even near something with a rainbow on it. God forbid. You know, that's the world you live in when you're in conversion therapy. You're in constant prison mentally.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. This time of year is the worst. I feel like I can't do anything and I can't enjoy my dinner because I can't taste my food and I can't work out because I feel tired and distracted. I can't even feel like I can host this show because my voice sounds like a duck. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D, designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has 2 powerful ingredients in just 1 pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. I feel like I've been using Claritin D for probably a few months now, and I have really noticed a difference. I can work out. I'm not feeling like my eyes are watering and my nose is all stuffed up. I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
How did you get out? How did you get to a place where you said, I'm assuming it was either you had like a life decision, like so many other people, of like, I'm either going to like stay and be like, lie and not be able to live with myself, or I'm going to be free and be Joanna. Like, yeah. Tell me about that.
My process of becoming honest with myself was years long.
Okay.
Because of my church background, my religious background, I mean, I believed the narrative that there was something wrong with me, that there was something inherently bad inside of me. I believed that trauma was the reason I wanted to wear women's clothes. I believed that trauma made me feel that way. I believed all these things that conversion therapy taught me, but a few things started to happen. I had kids. So I have three kids. They're so fun. They're my best friends. I love my children. They're
you
little.
Have three.
Still.
My God. How old are they?
I have three kids.
I have two. I don't know how people have more than two.
Yeah. 7, 5, and 3. So we've got our hands full
here.
Oh,
wow.
You know? Okay. So whenever the kids are here, you can't reach me for days on end. Because I'm always fetching food for children.
Yeah.
or breaking up fights.
I get it. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
But I started to have this thing where like I was having a hard time engaging with my children. I started to notice it, like when I was playing with my kids, like they wanted to play this game. And anybody who has kids or been around kids, they want to play the same game over and over and over and over and over again. Well, I just like found myself just like being a zombie when I was home. I was a zombie around my kids. I had a hard time like just engaging in simple things with them, you know. That was my first tip. The next one that really happened was COVID. If any of our listeners don't know what COVID is, I don't know what to tell you.
Where have you been living?
Yes,
if you don't know what COVID
exactly.
is? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome to Earth. but COVID just made me so aware of it. So one thing to know about somebody who has gender dysphoria. If you take away someone's privacy who has gender dysphoria, this is one of the issues in Christianity today. Mm-hmm. They treat problems with the wrong, they diagnose a problem wrong, and so they issue the wrong treatments. So, for example, gender dysphoria, one of the worst things you can do to somebody with gender dysphoria is take their privacy away. So for me, even before the pandemic, my phone was monitored. I couldn't take cash. Like this was the level of intensity that I had to live in, right?
Wait, who was doing that to you?
This was the therapist advising me and my spouse at the time. This is how you have to do it. Everything's monitored. Everything's tracked. Location, text messages, everything, my internet search history. Every single thing was monitored. As I said, I couldn't even carry cash. I just left my debit card at home. And so, like if I went out to Taco Bell, you'd get a text message. Why are you there? Or like if you go to the store, why are you there? That was the level of craziness that we lived in.
You were living in a prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, first of all, that's frustrating for somebody with gender dysphoria. But then COVID happened. And then all of a sudden, there was no privacy. I mean, we were stuck at home for months on end. And so all of a sudden, I had zero privacy to think, to journal, to process, to do anything. And so my dysphoria just went through the roof, because I all of a sudden I was living already under no privacy, and then all and any privacy was taken away because mm-hmm. of the pandemic. So I started to feel it a lot. So, you know, that started manifesting itself in, like, I would just get in my car and drive, and I would, like, put on women's clothes that I didn't know what else to do. You know, and that sounds crazy, but it's like the only way I could, like, get comfort in my life.
Well, you've been doing that your whole life. So it was taken away from you.
Yeah. Like, any privacy. If I had privacy, I would try to, like, be comfortable. I would put on clothes, you know, that make me feel comfortable. And it's not, and a lot of people in the Christian world think, well, it's just clothes. Why would you throw your whole world away for clothes, right? I heard that a lot. It's way more than that. It's way more, way, way, way more than that. Like, now I don't even think about clothes. I just pick this out of my closet today. I don't mm-hmm. even care anymore, you know, like, but it was about the expression of femininity and how I felt on the inside. But yeah, that happened. And then what really tipped the scale for me was George Floyd. And I know that might sound like a strange parallel, but if anyone who is a part of the church at that time, culture was going crazy, right? Over Black Lives Matter, thin blue line, you know. But the evangelical Christian church in which I was pastoring runs deeply conservative, right? And so here I am. I'm standing in front of thousands of people a week, singing, speaking. And I'm watching all these people whom I at one time loved and respected acting like complete fools and acting crazy, like just berating people for trying to stand up for minority groups. And then mm-hmm. the election happened and I was watching pastors that taught me truth. And I apologize if this offends anybody, but like they were believing in things that were factually like being proven false in the media, you know, like about the election and things like that. And my pastors were like pushing these lies and pushing these things. And I started thinking to myself, what have I been taught about myself? What have I been taught about God? What have I been taught about my gender that was so quote unquote true? What truth have I been taught by these people that is just total BS? So I just started reading. I started reading the Bible like front to back for months and months and months on end, asking the question, God, what do you say about me? I know what people say about me, but what do you say about me? And I love to joke, and I did a TikTok video about it, about how the Bible helped me come out.
You're making me cry. Yeah. And what did it like, say? And what did it say? I want to know. I'm joking.
Nothing.
But yeah, it says nothing. That's the thing.
It says nothing about trans people. It doesn't say anything about same-sex loving marriages and families. It says nothing about them.
So where are these people and I have never read the Bible from front to back, but I've been going to mass my entire life from.
You're a good Catholic. That's how it's
I'm a Catholic
to be.
Girl. But I don't, I have my dad actually, like one of my prized possessions in my life is my dad's Bible. My dad passed away when I was 13. But sometimes I'll like look at it, but it's really embarrassing. I don't understand it. I don't think most people understand what the Bible actually says. So you'll like read a page of it and then you'll go that I don't get it. Well, but where is this verbiage and these like, where is this coming from that people are quoting these things out of the Bible? Is this a whole nother podcast? Maybe
this could be a whole nother. I'd be happy to come back.
Maybe you should come back.
Yeah, I would love to.
But I do want to know something because I'm a very spiritual person. I talk about it a lot. And aside from like wherever I am in like organized religion or spirituality or whatever people believe, I have listeners that believe in everything. At the root of what I believe is my relationship with God is all that really matters. I do go to Mass, but that is also because I find like solace in Mass. I find I love my priest. I like to hear, I just like it, but it, and it gives me peace. Not masses and church and organized religion is not for everyone, just like the mega church isn't for everyone, just like Buddhism and being Jewish, whatever your beliefs are. But at the root of where I am in my life is my relationship, knowing that I want to live every day of my life doing the best I can and being good. And I'm not, I'm a big hot mess, but I try, and I know that God's with me, and I know that I'm loved, and I know that I love God. How do you feel about that with everything you've been through? And people being,
that's a loaded question.
Is it too loaded?
No, I'll try to get it in the next couple minutes here.
Okay.
I'm speaking at a Buddhist temple next month, right? Like I'm speaking at a Buddhist temple for a pride event. One thing we haven't really discussed, but I'm getting my degree in theology right now, so that I can be a hospital chaplain.
I love that.
You know, the idea, I believe at our core, that every single human being on earth is spiritual, has a spirit. And this is where I make Christians so mad. And it's okay. I'm okay with you being mad at me. But I do not believe in one way.
That's okay.
Because I preached one way theology for 18 years. I preached that. But when you get into the world, to the real world, when the rubber actually meets the road, when that book, when scripture and the person of Jesus hits the road with humanity, you start to learn really fast outside of that Christian, the Bible is the Supreme Court law of everything. You start to understand really fast that this book is not a collection of do's and don'ts. Mm-hmm. That is not what it is. You start to see the inherent beauty in every single person. One of my favorite theologians is a Catholic priest. His name is Richard Rohr. He's kind of one of the forefathers of what you call like progressive Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And here's like, I am a Christian. I am, Jesus is my connection to the divine, but I don't expect everyone else to have that connection. And that to that same in the same way. And so that's how I've kind of like reconciled my faith, is because like, the Jesus that's being preached in some churches, I can't worship that Jesus. I just can't. That might be how you understand the divine. Like, you know, Karen, who, you know, crazy Karen, who's all over my comment sections, like screaming.
Oh, I know some Karens. Believe me.
Yeah.
I understand.
If you want some entertainment, friends, go to any of my social media channels and you will have some entertainment for hours.
Yeah, yes. Sure. I don't know how you deal with that. That's hard. That's hard.
But the thing is, like, I have to come to a place in my heart and my spirit to know that Karen, who's screaming at me in the comments, telling me horrible, horrible things, I have to understand that she is a spiritual being as well. And the system that she is in right now has lost its way. But Karen herself, I have to find my way to love that person, because at the core of that person is a good person. And that's how I deal with it. That's how I deal with negativity and opposition, is to try and see the spirit of the person that's talking to me right now. And so that's how I've kind of held on to my faith through this, because I have had every excuse to say screw it, because Christians are terrible sometimes. That's why I speak again. That's why I speak, try to speak love into this community in which I pastored for 18 years to say, you're better than this. Jesus is better than this. His way is so much better.
I think too, it's like there's so much like misinformation in media, and like at the root of all of this misinformation is like money and people like, you know what I'm saying? And if people just really took the time to talk to other people and try and understand, maybe this wouldn't even be happening. So when did you, cause I know I skipped ahead, but when did you like finally like, are like get to this place where you are today, where you're like, I'm Joanna, I'm proud, this is who I am. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, from the time of this recording, it was 1 year and 2 months ago.
So recent.
I came out a year ago from this recording. Well,
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Here I am.
And do you, and are you like, I'm free, I'm me? Like, did you sing that song? I don't remember the words of the song, but I know you're a singer.
I don't know if I did, but, you know, that is where, and that's where I have really, put my stake in the ground is, you know, and I don't fault my LGBTQ friends for saying, I'm sorry, I can't follow this Jesus anymore. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. Through all of this, I've been singing my songs of faith, which has helped keep me rooted and keep me focused on what I love. And what I'm gifted at is doing that. And, you know, you said something, one of my songs on my album, I'm working on my third album right now, which is super exciting. Which if anybody's watching online, that's what's behind me here. I'm working
on
it.
What is it called? Let's promote it.
My new record that I'm working on, it's going to come out probably sometime in the fall of 2023. It's called Good Gifts is the name of the record. Unless I come up with something better, but that's the working title right now. It's called Good Gifts. My second album is called Shell of Me, which was the first record I released as Joanna. My first album is called The Way It Used to Be. It's all of the songs that I released as a Christian musician before transition, and I just re-released them under my new name. Because I was a touring musician. I was on the radio all over the country, you know, doing music. And the second I came out, it all disappeared. And so so I just decided I'm going to repackage all of it. But you mentioned something about how money is a driver. Mm-hmm. I was a pastor. I understand this because one of the lines, the second verse of the opening song of my album, Shell of Me, is called Sink. The idea of the song is like, people are going to say whatever they want, but I'm going to sink into every word that Jesus said and know it for myself. And the second verse says, the stances are driven by the wallets. That's one of the lines of the song. Mm-hmm. Coming from a church background, I know, and I talk to pastors every single week who pastor in non-affirming church spaces, who want to be affirming, but if they make that stance, their whole church will stop giving and leave, and they will lose their job, and they will lose their mortgages, and they will lose their marriages because they can't pay bills or whatever. Like, that is a reality that's happening within American Christianity right now, is that these churches have become such big businesses. Mm-hmm. That if a pastor wants to take a stance, they will lose their job or their church. And that's the reality that we face.
This is specifically like in the mega churches too, right? Where it's like all about, I hear you.
I talk to pastors of huge churches all the time who say, Joanna, I want to come out as affirming, but if I do it, I will lose my job. And I say, welcome to the club. Like,
yeah,
that's what happens. And it's sad. And some people just can't pay that. They can't pay that cost. And I don't fault them for it, because, you know, it's
I think there's a lot of people that are stuck in the middle with this kind of stuff, you know, and I think it's really difficult to want to use your voice and know that you want to use your voice, but you're afraid of how you're going to be treated. And at the root of everybody, they just want to fit in, you know? And that's the thing that's so difficult in life, is using your voice and what's right versus what's wrong. And that's one of the things, I think, a test in life of what we have to do. Let me ask you really quickly before we close, if there were misconceptions for people that they thought about trans people, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have?
Oh, gosh, yeah. And this is one of the biggest ones in media right now, and everything is a couple things. The first one, we don't transition to be happy. People will say, oh, I'm glad you're happy. I didn't transition to be happy. I and many of my friends have transitioned to be healthy. We're healthier people because of our transition. Mm-hmm. And the other one I want to say is that it is not about sexual gratification. There's this overemphasis that trans people just want to like wear dresses and heels and like look all this outlandish, like
to go kidnap some sort your of, kid.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that it's some sort of sexual fetish.
Yeah.
And that is just false. That is not reality. There is nothing sexual about my transition. There is nothing sexual about just trying to be healthy and being comfortable. And I guess another one is, if you're somebody of faith, is that there is absolutely a path to transition for Christians. And there's a lot of churches and a lot of clergy out there that will affirm that. And you don't have to listen to those who will tell you otherwise.
I think that's something that you said in the beginning when we were talking, and I could talk to you for hours.
Let's do it.
I know. Now we're friends. I always say that, like when people come on, I'm like, just so you know, you're my friend now, and we're staying in touch.
Listeners, you just listen to a friendship blossom.
I know. I love it.
You're welcome.
I was going to say what you said in the beginning. I just really want people to understand what you said about how sad it is that this is the reality that so many people in our country are feeling, that are trans or transitioning, or like the young kid scared to be who they are, that they don't see themselves wanting to live in the United States. Yeah. I mean, at the root of like what we are as Americans is I think we all really love our country. I mean, I talk a lot about how on 9/11, I was just talking to somebody about this like a week ago. On 9/11, when that happened, we all as Americans bonded together, and people would like let people go past them in traffic or not honk if somebody cut them off, or everybody had flags, you know, of like, you know, that we were all proud to be Americans. And then something has happened. I'm not going to say someone, but I will. I'll say someone then came into the White House. No, and I am political, and I'm sorry, because I try really hard not to be, but it is hard not to be for me, because I was always really, really proud of my country.
Yeah.
And I love what you said, that we all are good, you know, but I think we're just misinformed. I think a lot of us are just misinformed. So and try to inform yourself. That's what I'm going to leave with my listeners today. Try to like reach out. Like I don't know everything about being trans. I don't understand everything. Just like Joanna doesn't understand what it's like to be me. I don't understand what it's like to be her. Maybe reach out to somebody that you don't understand. And like, ask them questions. If you say the wrong thing, they're not going to bite your head off. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of people right now that are like, well, why, like, why are there drag people doing drag shows and reading to our children? Well, I can tell you, I've been just growing up doing theater my whole life. I've been going to drag bars since I was in high school, or maybe even probably earlier, maybe high school.
You're and still a cis female. So
yeah, I have never once thought, oh, this would be a scary place to take my child. Maybe some of the dances are a little provocative, but they're not like sitting here trying to do something to your child, just like a trans person's just trying to live their lives. So
I'm just trying to get beans in the grocery aisle.
Right. Right. And and if somebody let me ask you this. So I was in Home Goods the other day, which I love. Who doesn't love Home Goods, right? I don't know if you
preach.
Love I mean,
it.
Love yeah. Home Goods. You're like, I never knew I needed that candle and that weird like frog with fake grass growing out of it. But I was behind like three trans women. And I, you know, I could tell. And sure. I'm such a weirdo. Like, I wanted to be like, where are you guys going? Can we be friends? But that's just me. Not everybody does that. But I did notice the people in line were turning around and staring. And I was thinking in my head what that must make you feel like. Can you, before we close, kind of tell my audience how that might make you feel?
Yeah. I want everyone to know that we hear the whispers. Mm-hmm. We hear and we see the glares. We see the double takes. Because you may have been aware of our presence for that split second you saw us in the aisle, in the frozen food aisle. But the second we walked out of our car, we've been seeing it. And whenever you feel whenever somebody's whispering about you, it doesn't feel good. But I will say this. If you see a trans woman and you say, where are you going? Can we be friends? Do that.
Oh, really?
Do it.
I didn't do it. And part of me was like, maybe they're just going to think I'm so weird. No, I don't know.
The amount of negativity we experience, we just need that sometimes. So I've become like besties with one of the checkout ladies at my local Kroger. Like, so I just came in and then like, I think, you know, I somewhat pass. There's some days I don't like look like I pass. My voice gives me away a lot. So people are like, listen to the podcast, like what's going on? But like, you know, I had my pin on one day and she was like, are you gay? And I'm like, I'm trans. And she was like, no way. She was like, my daughter. So like, she just said, you're so gorgeous. You know, she like always compliments and it just kind of makes my day.
Yeah.
So like, do it. If you have something nice to say to a trans person, just say it.
Oh, and I love think that I wish I they would will, have.
They will. I mean, sure. Just like anyone in the world, you're going to run into some a-hole that doesn't want to talk. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, that's rare. Like if you say something nice to somebody, they're going to say thank you. And even if it's just one little thing, you don't know what they have been dealing with, you know.
And they're dealing with a lot right now. So like try to have some compassion, people, if you're listening. Joanna, in closing, I just adore you. I'm not kidding.
Oh.
Like we're friends now. And to my listeners, thank you for listening. If you have questions for me or feedback, you can always reach out. And for Joanna, where can people find you, Joanna?
Yeah, you can just go to Joanna Whaley, JoannaWhaley.com. That's my website. You know, and I'm not somebody that's just going to talk on a podcast and like not be available. I want to talk to you. I want to be a resource to you. And so JoannaWhaley.com is a great place to do that. Any of the social media channels,
yeah.
TikTok, I'm coughing. Joanna Whaley Music on all of the social media channels.
Well, in closing, I want to say once again, thank you so much for coming on. You know, I'm so glad that you came to your truth. I really am. I think it's a beautiful story and a beautiful evolution. And I knew when I saw you, like I say so many times, I was supposed to talk to you today at this minute. And I'm really proud to know
I'm crying, and it's not just because I was.
Oh, I cry all the time. Every podcast.
Because I was coughing.
No, I really, truly mean that. Everyone, be happy by making someone else happy. Thanks, Joanna.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.